Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Cam, what will this episode of Raw be remembered for, if anything, when, for some reason, we look back and think about it again? What stands out the most?
I mean, I think you'll be reminded of how good Seth and Bobby are, because they did put on a really good main event. But, yeah, this was all – here's what's coming in 2 weeks, what the whole show was. Here's what you can expect in 2 weeks. It was very – very by the numbers. Nothing really exciting happened. It wasn't a bad show by any means. But, yeah, it was all set up for a few weeks from now.
Well, was it in part because – and they had no idea it would be – at least last I checked, spoiler alert for NFL fans who watched Raw first and now are listening to us and are planning to watch the NFL game afterwards. But I don't know if they expected it to be a blowout. Obviously, they couldn't have forecast that. But maybe this was a show that just took into account this is the first time the NFL is running a playoff game on Monday night, head-to-head with them. And they just, you know, I mean, I wouldn't say that it felt like a ton more phoned in than some other Raws. But, yeah, there was a lot that just kind of felt like we're not going to forward things too much and we're going to fill 3 hours, but it's really going to be, you know, hype for the Rumble. The fans who are watching us, we want to get them a little more excited about the Rumble. And, I mean, you know, whether it did that or not depends on how much some of the cliches affect the, you know, the you know, each individual viewer. You know, the Mysterio's, was it Ray dumped Dominic over the top rope to show, and after they dumped the Street Profits, so to kind of show it's every man for himself. You know, we just kind of get that stuff sprinkled in. So, yeah, overall, and then obviously like a substantial video package on Brock Lesnar and Bobby Lashley comparing the two. Which
was really good, by the way. Yeah, yes, I really did like that.
It felt like they were, you know, building up a WrestleMania main event of the ages, and it's, you know, a match kind of thrown together at the Rumble due to some, you know, detours and booking. So, yeah, like I asked that question because I'm not quite sure, you know, if there was any kind of single main talking point otherwise. I didn't expect a finish to Lesnar Lashley, and I'm wondering if the stuff with Shelton and Cedric was all done just to create this escape hatch tonight.
Yeah, and as soon as they, you know, kind of booked them in the main event, it's like, this isn't going to have a finish. Like, you have both of them going in to face the respective champions in 2 weeks. Got to make sure they both look strong. And I also thought that the Roman and Seth video package was done very well, too. Like, I love how, like, there's no point in trying to edit Dean Ambrose out of these things, right? like he's very much a part of it. Let's do that. Yep. But, yeah, I thought they both looked really strong. I thought you met Bobby look good, being able to take out both guys at the end. But you also get reminded, hey, the Usos have Roman's back. Seth is going to have to come up with something creative if he's going to find a way to win this. So, yeah, I thought all that stuff at the end was good. I'm not quite as high on, like, the actual Rumble stuff because, like, I don't feel like there's a super clear-cut contender. And typically that's how it sets up. Like, it's not a bad thing that it might be, you know, kind of a surprise who ends up coming out on top. But, like, I think that, like, Bianca seems to be the very clear choice to win the Rumble. Like, it just makes sense. So on that side, I'm like, okay, I think they're doing a good job keeping her strong. She's not going to be in the title match at the pay-per-view, but that's probably a good thing. And it typically doesn't bode well for you if you're in the title match at the Rumble. But, yeah, on the men's side, it's a little more murky. I don't really know who is, like, a top contender right now who you'd really take seriously as, you know, facing one of those two guys at WrestleMania.
No, and I don't – does that make it more compelling than when we kind of know or it's like there's one or two people that are most likely to win and then – three or four that we sort of talk ourselves into thinking are a possibility just to keep things sort of interesting or the average, you know, some average viewers aren't decoding the booking and narrowing it down that much. But does the field seem like it's too muddled with everything going on with the booking that feels sort of off course in general? Does it seem like it makes it more compelling or less compelling for the majority of the viewers?
Outside of Damian Priest, I don't really know, like, who is a top singles act right now who isn't already in a title match, you know? They just don't really have, like, three or four or five guys who it's like, okay, like, I think this person is in a really good position to go to the next level. Like, there's, like, right now, this second, Bron Breakker and Carmelo Hayes have a good a shot as winning the Rumble as anybody else. And I really feel like that. You know what I mean? Like, they just don't really have anybody who really is standing out. Like, again, outside of Priest. And even on the, like, Austin Theory, maybe. I don't know. Like, yeah.
I know.
Typically, like, it's cool that you don't really know, but typically they have a few guys hot right now. Like, could it be Montez Ford? Maybe, but he's still very much in a tag team. You know, I don't know.
Well, let's pause. Let's introduce the show, and then we'll take calls and emails and talk through some more points on this show. A few things you mentioned there are worth expanding on. Because, there's little things wedged into this show that I think are interesting to explore more and extrapolate what the meaning is. And I'm just glad that Vince McMahon isn't massacring Austin Theory as we speak and shattering his skull. So all that will be left are, what was it, teeth and bits of his brain or something, and he's going to send a selfie to his mom. Man.
Oh, man. He's just excited because it's MLK Day.
Yeah, we got the video.
Holiday, I'm sure
we got it mid-show instead of at the beginning this week. But yeah, all right. So yeah, this is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-show for Monday, January 17th, 2022. And I'm Wade Keller, the editor, publisher, founder of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly newsletter and the website pwtorch.com, and also host of this, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast and Wade Keller Pro Wrestling post-shows, along with a variety of VIP-exclusive podcasts throughout the week, including The Fix with Todd Martin, Everything with Rich Fan, our post-pay-per-view roundtables, and the Wade Keller Hotlines, including the Focus on AEW and Focus on WWB series, plus occasional other shows that I'm part of. So go VIP if you want to hear all of our content and also hear our free shows like this one with the ads and plugs removed. pwtorch.com/goVIP gives you full details and a good overview of the array of features that come with our membership. The other voice you hear is Cameron Hawkins from the PW Torch East Coast cast. Cam, welcome back to the Raw co-host chair.
Always good to be here. I appreciate it.
Cam, tell people about how they can hear more from you, read more from you, and just keep up with what you're doing between times that you appear on this show.
Absolutely, absolutely. I am one-third of the PW Torch East Coast cast. Myself, Travis Bryant, and Rich Fan talking about the week in wrestling.
I like to think that you're 37 or 38%. A little more than a third.
Myself, Rich Fan, Travis Bryant. You can hear us Wednesday evenings, 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central. Taking your calls and emails on the week in pro wrestling. And that's at eastcoastcast.com. You can find me on Twitch, typically weekly, talking about not only wrestling, but typically I do a more pop culture show Thursday and Friday nights. That's twitch.tv/Seahawk, Twitter, Seahawk, Instagram, Seahawk, doing a little bit of everything. My most recent kind of project, Dominic D'Angelo from WrestleZone, actually has a new show. It's an around the horn style show with different wrestling pundits and analysts. This last week it was myself, Rich Fan, Phil Lindsay from Fightful, Andrew Thompson from Sporting News, and Andreas Hale, who's working on the Our Heroes Rock cartoon with Big E. We were talking about diversity in wrestling as it pertains to the Big Swole and Tony Khan situation, and also kind of what's going on in the main event of WWE. Really, really fun show we did on Friday that should be out on the WrestleZone YouTube channel probably later this week. So, yeah.
Excellent. Great. Let's give out the phone numbers here so we can continue our conversation on Raw with others. The number to call is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad to flag yourself so that we know that you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Let's get right to it. We'll begin with Nick in Brattleboro today. Nick, good to hear from you. What'd you think of Raw tonight?
Good evening. How are you guys doing tonight? Quick observation. Seems like a small crowd, especially according to WrestleTix. But they ran the Martin Luther King spot, and the one time they didn't sweeten the audience was after that. It was just like this smattering of applause. It was like, you guys couldn't push the button for that in Tulsa, no less. But just quick observation there. I don't know. WWE is starting to lose me. I mean, to sit through 2.5 to 2.75 hours of just inane, some of the most inane WWE stuff for a, you know, it was a good main event, but, you know, totally expecting some kind of funky ending. And then the only other good thing in the show that I thought was the video on Lashley and Lesnar, although it was, I just, the voiceover guy was just a little too much for me, but you know, I kept flashing back to NFL films, you know, that was it Steve Sable, I think, was the guy who voiced all those, who, like, he had that voice that was just unbelievable. But yeah, I just, I don't know, with SmackDown last week and this week, I don't know, they're starting to lose me.
Well, I think in general, the booking has been a bit of a mess. You know, the matchups where you're just not sure. I mean, and part of it is, you know, they split the roster and then they have a shallow roster. And part of that is a lot of the cutbacks, although the roster cuts weren't people who were being utilized a lot, but it did take away that option. And so you get the situation where you're supposed to choose between Doudrop and Becky at a time when they're trying to get fans to boo Becky. And you've got Seth against Roman, and now you have Seth against Lashley. And heck, I think people are still a little confused about Lesnar hanging out with Paul Heyman. There's so much ambiguity that I think it's leading to some ambivalence. And yes, people can have their own favorites, but I think the majority of people watching want us, and we talked about this last week, want to see somebody who they naturally like and are framed in a way where they're booked in a like of a way against someone you want to see lose. And there's just less of that than at any time I can remember. I mean, yes, Finn Balor and Austin Theory, you can say, well, that's a clear face heel matchup, but McMahon is bullying Theory in a way that almost makes him sympathetic. It's I don't remember a time, Cam, when there's been such ambiguity that I think is leading to ambivalence in terms of crowd responses than in the lead up to the Rumble and really what we've seen in recent weeks.
It's very much shades of gray. And even if you look at something like the Alpha Academy winning the tag titles, it really came out of nowhere.
Yeah,
like it just kind of happened, and it wasn't even like. And then next week they're going to have a variety show moment with Riddle and Randy Orton, you know.
Yeah.
And like, as good as Randy is, like they try to do this fish out of water stuff with him sometimes, and his heart's just not in it. You know what I mean? Like, this is not what he wants to be a part of. Not saying that he should, but it's just yeah, a lot of things are, even if they're not falling flat, they don't feel fully fleshed out. Like this Alexa Bliss's path back to Raw. This is like the third time they've kind of done the therapy thing, and it was really good with Daniel Bryan and Kane. It was kind of good with Sasha and Bayley.
Bayley.
This is kind of like, okay, like this is a thing, and maybe, you know, maybe they're going to push her. Maybe she's going to win the Rumble and get her shot at Charlotte. But it's like, yeah, everything nothing feels all the way fleshed out right now. That is very true. And then like he was saying, like Andrew was saying, it's a three-hour show. Like, they have no real clear direction on a three-hour show, and the roster's thin to the point where you have your top Raw heel facing the top SmackDown heel for the title. Like, yeah, it's really hard to know who you're supposed to be rooting for right now, and the wrestling isn't so good that it doesn't matter who you root for.
Yes, and even when the wrestling is so good, it still matters that you give people a good reason to root for someone most of the time. Sometimes you can have a match, and some might argue Seth and Lashley tonight was that match, and that Lashley and Lesnar will be that match. The exception where it just feels like it's a good match, and we care about the wrestlers, and that's enough. But a lot of WWE's booking just feels like it's so much of that is not by design, but just a lack of other options. I mean, when we look at the women's division, it's like they want to save Becky Bianca, I assume, for another time, probably WrestleMania, and they just did Liv Morgan, and so it's like, I guess it's Doudrop because Rhea Ripley and Nikki aren't ready, and that's their women's division right now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they're not going to do Zelina or Carmella in that spot either.
And there aren't even any teams, not to even cut you off, there are no teams to face them right now.
Yeah, I know.
Like,
I mean, it is at a point where they're just like, you know, they're casting this like a sitcom as opposed to a pro wrestling company. Like, we have these characters and we're paying them, and we're not going to pay anyone else to be on standby. We're not going to pay a bunch of extras, you know, six-figure full-time livings if they aren't in money positions. Mm. And if we need anyone, we'll hire them, or we'll, you know, promote them from NXT. And, you know, I mean, the repetition amongst the baby faces and heels was a problem for the last couple of years, but now they're going with these novel matchups, which are more interesting in the short run to watch, because they don't feel like the same thing we've been seeing. But I didn't really care who won between the Rams and Cardinals tonight. You know, I mean, I checked the score like twice. I don't have an investment in it. And the game could be good, but I don't really, you know, I don't care. I'd rather watch a game when I really like one team and dislike the other. Mm-hmm. And WWE is sort of have control of that. And by design, they're putting teams out there that fans don't like against each other. And so, yeah, it's not a great time as far as sparking, you know, emotions in a traditional way that pro wrestling promoters have in order to sell tickets.
Absolutely.
Nick, back to you.
Yeah. The other big thing is where was Big E tonight? I mean,
I know.
Shouldn't he be claiming that he's going to enter the Royal Rumble? Or unless he already has, I missed it. But he should have made an appearance tonight, unless they're giving him the week off or something. Or is he done? Is he done until SummerSlam?
Nick, he was a centerpiece as world champion. He cut a good promo after losing the title, acknowledging the loss, and it was like, all right, they're, you know, gearing him up to come back. My hunch, and I guess my hope, is that they gave him the week off and they want to have something big with him next week, as opposed to having him do something forgettable this week. This was part of them sort of waving a white flag up against the NFL. That's my hope, but it did cross my mind, you know, deep into the show. They haven't mentioned him. Is he going to appear? If so, what's he going to do? Cam, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I think you realize just how much energy the shows miss when you don't have the New Day. Like, you know, Xavier's hurt, and Kofi had a singles match last week with Madcap Moss. But, yeah, those three guys typically bring so much energy and fire into a building. I just feel like they're not having him on this week because it really wasn't anything for him to do. Like, they had the big eight-man tag. Like, you have four clear established teams there. You had the main event where you were going to get, Hurt Business and the Usos kind of playing their part in this long-term feud. I just think there wasn't anywhere to have him on this week in what they were pushing. I don't know who he would face. Like, you know, Austin Theory's beating guys right now. So, really, Big E kind of would have been the odd guy out. And so I think it's just a week off to have a week off. But, yeah, like, there's just an energy that he brings, that Woods brings, that is noticeable in both how you hear the crowd and how you see the crowd. I figure he'll still be at the Royal Rumble, in the Royal Rumble. But, yeah, I think it was just a week off to have it.
Nick, what was your favorite part of the show? Like, what were you just entertained by, even if you have, you know, some issues booking-wise or anything? Was there just sort of a moment that added some worth to your investment?
I guess it was when they came out of the commercial on the main event, and they actually, you know, I kind of looked at the clock and I said, okay, they've done this ad. I'm going to get 6 or 7 minutes of two very good athletes before whatever screwy finish they're going to have. You know, I was kind of like, And I enjoyed the story that they told. I mean, that Seth was working the knee, and Bobby did a very good job, I think, of selling the knee. Mm-hmm. And Seth is always very good at selling. That was my favorite, but it was also I guess I'm a Lashley guy. I guess just because Seth is so annoying. I'd say that was the best. And then I guess I had some high hopes that Ripley was going to beat the tar out of Nikki and drive her off and have her walk into Alexa's therapy session or something. I kind of, in a sense, I don't want them to be a tag team, but I want Alexa and Nikki to, now that Nikki's evil, I want them to get back together as like an evil cohort or something.
Cam, what have you thought out of the last 2 weeks of Alexa Bliss's promos? Keeping the same character, some thought she'd be totally repackaged in a different way. Some supernatural stuff last week, and then here just more, you know, some word association and her snapping when the therapist dared suggest maybe that her friend is imaginary. I like the idea of Nikki and Alexa together, but I don't know if Nikki in the superhero outfit works with what Alexa's doing, but chemistry-wise, it could be a lot of fun. Your thoughts on Alexa's long-awaited return, and it's, you know, kind of more of the same.
She's definitely a priority to them, and she has been. I always thought her character work with her first character, I thought it was really good. I'm not a huge fan of what they have her doing, but she tries her hardest in it, and so I do respect that part, you know.
Yeah.
I like that she's all in on it, but I just – when they've done these things, like even with The Fiend, they ran out of ideas. Like with Kane, Undertaker, they ran out of ideas. And it seems to be like they did not really have a lot for her to do the last time around, even though the stuff with her and Charlotte telling her to get more serious I thought was intriguing. But if they're going to go with the same character, it'll be what it's going to be. Like, I don't think it has the super high ceiling because I didn't think it had one the first time because you run out of magic tricks. But, you know, she's putting her all into it, so maybe it does pay off for, you know, a month or two when she comes back, but I still think it's going to be short-lived.
Nick, are you watching anything else these days? Like, how much other wrestling are you watching?
I'm watching AEW. Rampage is kind of hit or miss. A lot of times I might miss it Friday night because I'm on hold waiting for you guys. and then I'll pick it up like Saturday or Sunday, you know, on the Net 7. I'm one of the Net 7 viewers.
Yeah.
I'm pretty much – Dynamite's pretty much appointment viewing. I'll maybe pop in and watch a, you know, an MLW show. Never got into New Japan, even though I've seen some matches, and I think, you know, they're fabulous athletes. But that's about it. I mean, I have a new job, so I'm working a lot, and unfortunately, I've gone down the rabbit hole on YouTube of watching these flat Earth debates. I'm embarrassed to say it. You know, I watch the Globe people yell at the flat Earth people. It's hysterical.
Which side of this?
Oh, I'm a Glober all the way.
Oh man, that's no fun. No, I'm kidding. So you haven't been swayed.
Oh, no. Yeah. What it is 90% of these people are just doing it so they can make money on YouTube. You know, it's purely. Then there's
total
10%.
Carney Mark. Yeah.
Yeah. Then there's like 10% that are really nuts. But and it's you know, part of it is I've got so much to watch that I just can't decide. You know, do I watch Boba Fett? Do I try and catch up on Succession, which I know that's what you're gonna recommend. Do I watch Wheel of Time? And then as I said, I have a new job as a town administrator, so I'm just like crazy.
Yeah, I'm curious with I ask because I'm curious if, you know, when people get frustrated with WWE, if it's sort of not sunk cost fallacy, but, you know, like, what else are you watching? Is it going to other wrestling? Does Impact stand to benefit? You know, they've got some new names coming in pretty consistently lately, but, you know, so many free agents, and it just feels like a show that's working a little harder, and now they've got the former Tom Phillips there as perhaps an upgrade from you know, the Matt Stryker and what they were doing before D'Lo on the announced team. And, you know, if you like pro wrestling, I'm sure there's these other companies, like you mentioned MLW, that are just, you know, yelling, hey, try us. We're working really hard. We've got a weekly episodic show that we think you'll like more. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure WWE Plus.
Yeah, I don't even, I mean, to a certain extent, it's similar to when I got out of wrestling back in the early 2000s. It's kind of there wasn't an alternative. And the only thing that really brought me back to wrestling is my store manager when I was down in Pennsylvania. He was huge into ROH and stuff, and so we started watching it. And we said one night, let's have a party at the store, and we'll pay $10 and watch WrestleMania. You know, because I used to buy the buy the pay-per-views and have friends over, and we'd have Chinese food. You know, it was a whole thing in the late 90s with the Monday Night Wars and everything. And then I got out of it. And then I came back, and there, you know, it's, where is Impact? I don't even know what channel it's on.
It's on Access on Thursday night.
Oh, you see, I don't get Access. I guess I'd have to watch it on, watch clips and stuff.
It's available on Philo, which if you are looking to get a cable, a $25 give or take cable package, Philo is the online service that definitely has it. Anyway, Nick, anything else you want to bring up from Rob before we move on?
Just real quick on Nikki, what would I think would be hysterical is if they did a little Dark Phoenix thing with her, where they changed, she had a transformation in her outfit, to solidify her turn to the dark side. And with that, I will let you go.
Cool.
Have a great week. And anyway, it was a wild week of football. I got to say that.
Yeah, boy, that Cowboys game. Wow. Thanks, Nick.
Okay. Bye bye.
Yep. Cam, what's your take on the Cowboys finish? Because if there were 3 seconds more on the clock and he knocked 20 yards off the Hail Mary and got one, I think everyone's like, what is he doing? And it's like, well, he was just like off by 3 seconds because the defense let him run five extra yards. And then he kind of forgot the ref has to touch the ball. Had it worked, it would have seemed brilliant. I think people are being a little hard on Dak.
Yeah, I mean, they shouldn't have been in that position in the first place, but they were, and, you get to the end of games. Like, that's kind of how it breaks down. So, yeah, if he drops a little bit sooner and gives himself up, maybe they have a bit more time. But you have to remember, I'm a Washington football fan, and so I was with my friends laughing and yelling and screaming.
It's never sad when Jerry Jones' team loses.
Yeah,
I mean, unless...
Literally, I was squatting down praying that everybody would be upset. It was fantastic. I loved it. It's we could get into a whole thing about that, but we the Cowboys are the Cowboys because they're popular, but they've done nothing to prove that they're anything other than okay for going on almost 20 years, and it's gonna keep being. Did I say 20? I'm sorry, I meant 25. and it's just going to keep being that, and it's gonna be funny every single year.
So how do you feel Rhea Ripley is doing in this feud with Nikki? We've talked about Nikki and different directions she can go, but is Ripley going to come out of this better off? And what do you think of her acting, her mic work, in terms of showing signs of at least impressing Vince McMahon to get her up another notch on the roster after this feud is done?
It's always interesting when somebody uses like logic on Raw. And she was even like, look, if we weren't going to be a tag team anymore, we could have just not been a tag team. Like, she didn't have to attack me. And it's just like, what do you... Yeah, it's like, don't say the thing that we're all thinking, because why didn't they just do that? You know what I mean? Like, it was so unnecessary. But yeah, I think that her being able to explain that and coming across as coherent and making sense and being kind of level-headed with all this, I think is really good. I think, between her and Bianca, they are kind of the future of this division. They made it look like that 2 years ago with the Survivor Series stuff. They made it look like that with them in War Games. They made it look like that with them at the Rumble last year. I definitely think that, she has a great trajectory. I think they need to get those two off of the same show so that they can be respective champions on each brand now.
All right, let's go to our next call. By the way, you can get in line. 347-215-8558 is the phone number. 347-215-8558. And if you call, push 1 on your keypad or email wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, William in San Diego, you are up. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind about Raw tonight?
Hey guys, thank you for taking my call. I don't think I have like one big topic, just a bunch of small stuff. I guess I'll start with the Miz and Maryse. Ever since she came back, there's always something I felt about Mike or the Miz with the is that he just feels more important, more serious. He just feels like a bigger deal whenever she's around. And it was really apparent when he was doing the whole shtick with Johnny Morrison and they were just being like goofs. But yeah, whenever she's around, he just feels like he has it all. You know, he has the looks, he has the money, he has a loving wife, a loving family. And I just I got a kick out of that segment backstage, the two of them just making out, like not caring about the cameras or who's looking at them. And so, yeah, that's something I want to bring up. I don't know if you guys.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's talk about that and then we'll go back to you. So what have you thought, Kim, of the just the broader Miz and Maryse dynamic and then the Edge and Beth Phoenix dynamic? Edge, I feel, uses lines that are like 2 to 4 years old, like 2 to 4 years out of date. When he's trying to become, I'm trying to remember what the line was that he said on tonight's show. It'll come to me. But anyway, and what have you thought of what you've seen from Edge and Maryse so far too?
So I mean, Edge seems like he's having a good time. I do think that he has.
Oh, keep doing you.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a couple years like out of date. Like like school teachers are saying that now. It's like it's time to move on.
He's high school English teacher. I'm keeping up with the kids. I think
exactly.
He does have kind of a healthy respect for the Miz. I think it comes across in the way they talk about each other. I think him getting to work with Beth is probably a checklist thing for Edge, I'm assuming.
Yes, that's what it
is. And so, they seem to be enjoying each other's time. He's, he hypes her up. He's very positive about who she is and her being big and strong and kind of revisited everything she did when she was in the women's division. So that was really cool last week. Maryse is funny, like genuinely funny. And so last week with her just walking away from the idea of confronting Beth and Miz talking and having to turn around and see her, like I also think they do a good job of hamming it up. But yeah, Miz has gotten like better and better and better as the years have gone on and can kind of fit whatever role they want him to. He can be just serious enough but still kind of show tail when necessary. So yeah, I think that is going to be a fun match. I expect Miz and Miz and Maryse to do a lot of comedy flopping around. But I actually think they might win the match just to have kind of a thorn in their side because I don't think Beth's going to be, doing things for a whole long time. But I think that the chemistry between the four of them has been good. And, yeah, Maryse absolutely holds up her end, by being like by show and tell, just like Miz does. They're very good together. I think it's going to be a really fun match. I do.
I felt like for years, Jim Cornette's tennis racket, they needed to take the cover off and show that it was steel plated. And I think they did it like in 1988, but it had been like years and years and years. Maybe you did it like once in Smoky Mountain, but maybe not. So my point is like, just because you did something years ago to establish that a seemingly innocuous object is actually deadly, you want to remind people of it. You have new audience, new turnover, short memories. And I thought it was really cool that they just showed this like brick from Maryse's purse and just bragged about it. Now, you would think maybe there'd be an authority figure who would have something to say about that. And it's part of the construct of WWE's world, their universe, that is lacking. There's not really, it feels sort of arbitrary and circumstantial when something matters and when it doesn't, when you get suspended for doing something bad and when the announcers just both sides it and act like it's just a way to get motivated and make a statement. There's not sort of that I think, moral guidepost that fans can go, ooh, he just crossed a line. She just did something she's in trouble for. You never really feel that. Because people can just get away with anything sometimes and sometimes a lot less than anything, and it just doesn't make any sense why. So I would clean that up just philosophically. That said, because many eras and many territories, that purse, Maryse would have denied it was loaded. She would have denied it's loaded. She would have denied it's loaded, and a baby face would have gotten their hands on it and unzipped it, and a brick would have fallen out. She'd be petrified of what the authority figure was going to do to her, suspend her, fine her. And we don't get any of that. The heels get to brag about using a semi-deadly object and hitting somebody from behind, and there will be no ramifications for it. So I'm of mixed feelings on this. I'd rather someone else exposed it, and there were some ramifications. The old school way would be the authority figure coming out and threatening to suspend Maryse for using a brick, and then Beth Phoenix and Edge would say, no, don't suspend him. I want to get my hands on him in the ring. The fans would cheer. The authority figure would give in. And your booking structure is in place, which is its ramifications for certain actions. Vince McMahon is so far beyond that, and I think he has a whole team of writers who don't even know what I just described is actually a thing that was done in every era up until semi-recently. So maybe it's hopeless on the WWE front. So I'm going to take the little bit that I can get, which is at least they showed why Beth went down so hard.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, like you said, the purse would have, or the brick would have fallen out the purse when nobody was looking, and she would have scrambled to pick it up.
Yes, there you go.
And then
Jimmy Smith would say, "Did I just see what I thought I saw?" And Corey Graves would say, "You're hallucinating," you know, and it, you know, deny it.
The only consequences are when Naomi does something or in the main event on SmackDown sometimes.
There you go.
When the authority figures show up. Every other time, they just kind of let the inmates run the asylum. They don't really care.
So Edge and Beth is sort of their bucket list team together. And, you know, Beth is like, "Well, I'm not going to give up this match because I want to team with my husband for the first time ever." And the people want to see that. I think Miz and Maryse are a little more adorable as a couple than Beth and Edge, with Beth kind of cosplaying and Edge saying, you know, dated dad lines, or like you say, high school teacher lines, 3-4 years too late. I think he's losing a little something in this. Now, maybe it's ultimately worth it because I'm not really against this feud, but Edge went from a guy who you're like, oh, he's going to main event WrestleMania, he's going to be a world title contender, there's an intensity, and now he's just like husband, dad, and his wife is sort of cosplaying for nostalgia, and I don't know, it just doesn't seem like, it just feels a level lower. And again, if this was the most he's capable of and the most star power he had, and this was the right level for him, so be it. It's not bad per se, but I just feel like they don't have a lot of pieces to play with. And there's not an intensity to this. It does just sort of feel like novelty. And as you said, just a checkbox to check in their careers.
Yeah, the guy who won the Royal Rumble last year is doing a mixed tag match at the Rumble this year.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's definitely and the crazy part about it, and we talked about this before, he has a mixed tag match at the Royal Rumble in a year where you let go of a bunch of people. Like, when you need single stars, one of the reasons you don't have one is because you took him out of the singles program. And again, we know there's wear and tear on Edge. We know he can only do so much, but you still, like, this is the type of event somebody who is working part-time and capable of working part-time would be a part of. Like, the Royal Rumble is exactly that. So, yeah.
If this is the most he can do, you know, because of the wear and tear at his age and the time off, I mean, great. You know, I mean, if this is the most he can do or physically wants to take a chance on, I admire him for that. But it doesn't change the fact that if he were in the main event mix, even if the payoff wasn't going to be some grueling, hard-hitting, dangerous one-on-one match with a top guy, you don't have to make that baked into the story. You can make people think he might win. But WWE doesn't want fans to be disappointed that Edge didn't make it if they don't plan for him to make it. So they kind of reduce the options by design and put him in, you know, the mixed tag against the King of Soft style, which I get, and you know, where the wives are going to be doing a decent amount of the work in the ring too. So, you know, good for him to get a payday and play it safe if it is limited. But if he can do more, I hope he can gear up from this sort of, you know, whatever this is, but there's not a lot of edge to this character right now. Go ahead, Cam. Are you going to follow up with something?
I was just going to laugh at you saying edge about edge, like Damian Priest did earlier.
Yes, yes.
But I think what I have with Edge and with the run that Aaliyah had for a few weeks, I do like that, like, the face superstars are coming up to, like, these legends and Hall of Famers and asking them for advice. I do think that's been a nice touch on the show. It makes them seem important. So that has been pretty cool.
I agree with that.
Again, if Edge is in that space, you'd like to see him, you know, competing for the title or being up in that area. So, yeah.
William, back to you.
Yeah, I wanted to move on to Lashley and Lesnar. Last week I called and I lamented the direction that they were heading, where Lesnar was kind of downplaying Lashley's accomplishments and, like, you know, taking him like a joke almost. And I really thought they steered the ship in the right direction this week. I think they did exactly what I was hoping they would have done from the right from the start. And even in the video package, like, they took segments from last week, but they omitted the part where Lesnar did that, you know, Lashley, who joke, or I don't even know who you are, and that sort of stuff. And it now it's feeling like, you know, like exactly what I was hoping it was going to be, like two alphas with similar but not exactly the same careers going at it at the Rumble, and just like a big fight. So do you guys think this is the direction they're going to stick with, or are we going to see something next week where, you know, Lesnar is just going to downplay again Lashley as an opponent?
Your thoughts on that?
I think that this is going to be – it won't be stylistically the same, like Brock and Daniel Bryan, Brock and AJ, Brock and Finn, but this is going to be very much – this is somebody going toe-to-toe with Brock. Like, I still expect Brock to win because it is the Royal Rumble, but I think this is very much going to be an even matchup, more even than most Brock matches. I'm really looking forward to it. Like, of course, this is something we would have loved to have seen 16 years ago, but I still want to see it right now. Like, it is going to be two horses going at it. I think they're very much going to treat it like that. Like, I feel like this is going to get 15 minutes on the show. Yeah, I'm excited to see it.
Yeah. It feels like it isn't getting – When it first was announced, it felt like, okay, this isn't going to feel as big as it could. And I feel like they're working really hard to make it feel as big as it can, but it's still not WrestleMania. And so it, you know, obviously they have other things in mind. So we'll kind of have to see how it all plays out. But yeah, I think they're going to get plenty of time to tell a story. And then I'm wondering where we go from there.
Again, I have no idea who's going to win either of these Rumbles. It's like, who's even out there? If one person wins a Rumble, who's the contender on the other side? Because I don't think they're going to do unification. The Universal title is still so new. Even though, you know, you had two guys basically have it almost its whole existence as far as the length goes. But, yeah, I have no idea who your top two contenders would be. I don't think it's going to be Orton. I don't know.
William, our switchboard just glitched, and we lost some callers here. So if you can hear us, call back, because it sounded like you did have more that you wanted to say. What was I going to say about that? As far as the finish of the match, are you worried that what we saw tonight with Cedric and Shelton is indicative of what we're going to get at the Rumble, that they're going to just do that again?
I feel like they are, if he didn't get rid of them tonight, I feel like that's going to play out next week. I don't know if it's going to be a handicap match or what, but I think that their involvement in this feud stops next Monday in order for it to kind of be a clean match, for lack of a better way of saying it. But yeah, I do not think this lasts until next.
All right, I refreshed the switchboard. It looks like William did just call back, so let's go back in for some follow-up. Sorry about that, William. Go ahead with other topics that you have for us.
Sticking a little bit with that main event. I'm not going to ask if, like, you guys think they're where they're headed, like, who's going to be a babyface or a heel after this, because, yeah, it just feels like they're not even sure, and they're just kind of fighting. Biting their time until the WrestleMania. So I'll ask, where should they all land? Like, after this, like, out of the two big matches, Lesnar versus Lashley and Roman versus Rollins, where would you guys like everyone to land, specifically the heel face chart? And I guess most specifically for me, the one I'm most interested in is Rollins, because he does feel like he's being going a little bit in the face direction recently. Tonight, I kind of got the sense that when the Hurt Business, or when Alexander and Shelton Benjamin were beating down Lashley, it kind of felt like maybe Rollins was like considering helping him or something, or maybe that's just me like wishful thinking, because I haven't been feeling this cartoonish heel character for the longest time, and I know a lot of people were down on his babyface character, but I feel that after that SummerSlam match where He beat Lesnar clean. I feel like he was finally coming to his own as a babyface, and I kind of wish that we could go back to that eventually, because I do think that he still has some legs left as a babyface. So, yeah.
So my question, William, about that is, and Nick and Tom talked about this on Nick and Tom's Intercontinental Adventure VIP weekend show focused on WWE. Steph took Rey's eye, like gouged Rey Mysterio's eyeball out. Like, you can't just like decide he's going to be a circumstantial babyface because of his opponent, or soft turn him, where it's like, well, now the announcers are saying nice things and he's facing heels and he seems like the lesser of two evils. Like, WWE does this so much. Like, the Viking Raiders lose 1 week and then they're number one contenders the next. There's such short memories that is demanded of us in order to make any sense of what they do. And the problem is that chips away at our ability to fully invest in what we're watching now. If we think a week from now or 3 weeks from now, or even a year later, none of it will matter because we're going to just be asked to forget about it or disregard it. So when people say, oh, turn Seth babyface, or maybe they're trying to turn a babyface, like, how do you erase what he did to Rey from that if he's essentially playing the same character and not having some sort of transformational moment where we see he's really regretting the things he's done and asks for some forgiveness? So that's just, to me, still a flaw in the booking scheme of WWE.
No, exactly. I was just going to say that I agree with a lot of that. Like, I feel that, like you've brought it up a bunch of times, that they just don't do turns anymore. It doesn't feel like they do, angles where a heel will have like a come to Jesus moment where they'll finally see the error of their ways. And we really saw that. I think one of the biggest examples we saw recently was Sasha Banks, turning babyface just because Bayley decided all of a sudden that she didn't need to tag team with Sasha anymore. I would hope that they would find a way to pivot the character somehow and not just have it be circumstantial like you mentioned. But another kind of close example I think would be Randy Orton. Like, Randy Orton did some pretty awful stuff in the last couple of years. Like, he take out Edge. He took out Matt Hardy and kayfabe. He burned the Fiend alive. Like, he's done a lot of awful stuff, but now he's coming out, and I apologize for the cars driving by. But he's done a lot of awful stuff, and now he comes out every week, and I mean, he's like the lovable Hey Randy character, the half of RK-Bro. That's another part where I wish they would have done. They kind of snuck into him being a babyface instead of doing it in a big way, where I would hope that they would give him like a reason to be a babyface, not just have it be circumstantial.
Cam, your thoughts on that and what WWE asks us to forget about? And there's, Vince McMahon might not be even remembering or thinking about it. He's promoted so many angles for so long, and he just might think it doesn't matter, or he doesn't even remember it himself because he's just forward thinking. He's thinking about today and what's coming up.
And even more recently with like Sasha, who was a heel against Bianca, but is a face because she doesn't like how management is treating Naomi.
Yep.
Like, it really, like, nothing happened specifically with her to make her want to do that. And so, yeah, they've been just kind of have people playing gray, and your alignment seems to be based off more who you're facing than how you actually feel. I don't think that's really benefited anybody. The thing with Randy Orton, though, like, I'll not give them a pass, but Randy Orton's a legacy guy in the sense that I remember Kurt Angle's ECW promo about putting Jesus in the ankle lock and not being a big fan of black people. And his point was, like, it doesn't matter what I say, because when I go out there and do my thing, they're going to cheer me because they respect me. And I think Randy Orton is just kind of there. And so You know, whatever you do with him, I think you're going to get a certain reaction. But like with Seth, who not more valuable than Randy Orton, but is much more part of the main event scene, especially over the last few years, you know, the thing that he has over Roman is very much a face thing. Like, Roman, I understand, but I brought you along. You're here because of me. I know how to beat you. You know, laughing in that man's face when nobody laughs in Roman's face because Roman's supposed to be the baddest dude on the planet, you know? They are definitely doing things to kind of play up the baby face. They had him just kind of stand there in disbelief tonight in what was happening with Lashley and the Hurt Business. And so, yeah, it's everybody's orientation is so skewed now. It's really hard to know where they stand other than I'm supposed to cheer them because this is the match that they're in.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's like following an NFL season, but like every 4 weeks, the records just sort of reset randomly. And it's like, well, why did I get invested in that close game that my favorite team won or lost if the records randomly reset or are scrambled 4 weeks or 8 weeks later? You know, and that's kind of how your emotions are treated by WWE month to month. And it's not a good thing. William, anything else for us?
One last topic I want to bring up. I think Nick brought it up briefly, and it's that the tag team women's division is just like non-existent at this point almost. We saw it tonight where when Rhea and Nikki were having their match, I was like completely taken by surprise when Selena and Carmella came out, and I was like, wait, aren't they just going to move on? And then I had that second that thought where it was like, well, where are they going to move on to? Like, there's no one else. There's no other tag teams for them to move on to. So I don't know. What do you guys think about the future of that division? Are they going to be calling up people from NXT, or are they just going to scrap the titles, or what would you guys do? Or what do you guys think they'll do?
I mean, I think when it's time to have a new matchup for whoever the champions are, they will, you know, shuffle a couple people from the main event scene into a tag team, or yes, they'll call somebody up and they'll view those two teams. It'll be Tamina and Natalya again, or Aaliyah and someone else. Like, they'll just mix and match and keep the titles around, but they don't have a deep roster, you know, by design. They don't want the payroll. Their structure of how they present their wrestlers and their TV shows doesn't involve people who aren't going to be on the next pay-per-view for the most part. They're not bringing people along. It's in contrast to how AEW does things, where there's, you know, a lot of wrestlers and you don't necessarily see the top stars every week in significant segments, if at all. And there's people on the undercard that are being developed or just sort of standing around waiting for their turn. And they're just not much of that at all going on right now. But I could see them teaming up Dana Brooke and Tamina from their time in the 24/7 division becoming the next challengers to Alexa and Nikki. I mean, they don't need more than two other wrestlers and to group or promote or dust them off because they haven't been using them and we forgot about them. And that's all they're going to do. And there'll be 4 months of that. And then after that, they'll do the same thing. I don't think they're going to retire the titles because they don't have tag team depth. It's not having tag team depth is by design because Vince doesn't want to have anyone else on people's minds other than the top people who are going to be on a pay-per-view or on TV every week involved in a program. Cam, any thoughts on that?
I think this year's over-under is 9 on how many NXT wrestlers you might see in the Women's Rumble. Because if you take everybody who is, I want to say, on the main roster, who is not in a title match, and not in a title match, and and is also including like the legends they listed as returning, I think you'd still have like 11 slots. Mm-hmm. And so I think the future of the women's tag division, in 2 weeks, you're going to see what they think of who they have down in NXT. Because that's, you know, we've seen Vince literally throw a bunch of teams together on the men's side. Like Ricochet and Aleister Black were a team because reasons. So I think, you know, you might see Io Shirai and Dakota Kai as your next women's tag champs. Like, you really might see that. Like you said, there's really no rhyme or reason to the division right now. They're not building teams, but they do have, you know, people down there who can work. And so you're going to see some mishmash tag teams here pretty soon.
All right, William, any closing words?
Yeah, agreed with Cam on that. Yeah, it does feel like they're having a lot more women from NXT and from the past in the Royal Rumble than usual. I guess one other tag team just spitballing that you could have there, maybe, I don't know, do something with Xia Li and Naomi or something for SmackDown. Because the original conceit was that there were going to be floating champions, and not just SmackDown or Raw, they were also going to be facing people from NXT. But they kind of shot themselves in the foot when they created exclusive NXT women titles, tag team titles, and then started firing a bunch of people from the main roster. So, yeah, I don't know, like, what they were thinking with that. But, yeah, that's all I had, guys. Thank you for taking my call.
Great. Thanks, William. Appreciate it. Got an email here that is pertinent to some things we haven't brought up. JB from Detroit says, I'm so confused on how we're supposed to interpret Kevin Owens' current character. He's a liar, but that isn't really a character. That is a character trait. So he's got a few other points here, but, you know, we talk about feeling sort of ambiguity towards people. With Kevin Owens, I mean, I guess if he's against a babyface, then we don't like that he's a liar. But if he's doing it in a clever, funny way to one-up somebody we don't like, then I guess we're supposed to find it endearing or a good strategy to get himself ahead. What have you thought of Kevin Owens, and what do you think tonight of the way Damian Priest potentially looked like he didn't see what everybody at home saw, which is Kevin Owens is lying? Did Priest show enough skepticism when he approached Kevin Owens, or did it look like his guard wasn't up when everybody watching their guard was up?
Now, it's not a flaw in Priest, but he absolutely has one tone. And so even when he's trying to emote that he might not believe somebody, it sounds just like he didn't believe them. Like, he's not that he was trouble emoting, but having a voice that deep and having one tone, you never know if he's in on the joke or not, is the thing. I think the issue is this, though. Like, Kevin Owens is not Sami Zayn. Sami Zayn can get away with being less than tough and, you know, kind of chickening his way through a match or weaseling his way through a match. And Kevin Owens is too big and too athletic to do that. And so where it came out, like, hey, you know, I don't want the other guy to come out. Like, let's have, like, a regular match, nothing crazy. But then Kevin Owens turns into Kevin Owens and is, like, going, like, move for move, toe-to-toe, powerbombing Damian Priest and hitting him with Swanton bombs. Like, it's, like you said, it's a character trait and not a character, and so it does not play out in the matches. And so, yeah, it just kind of comes across as this is kind of how we're supposed to feel about him right now. Like, he might not be saying everything that's true, but when the bell rings, he's still Kevin Owens. So I don't think it's really doing a whole lot for him right now.
They have added an apostrophe to championship contenders match finally. So at least there's some grammatical justification for this euphemism for non-title matches. The match belongs to the challenger. It's a championship contenders, apostrophe S, match. This match belonged to Kevin Owens. He won it, which is not a surprise because in WWE, challengers win non-title matches as the shortcut way to thus earn a title match, which they then usually go on to lose. It's one of the parts of the WWE format now that's just overdone and tired and lazy, and they did it again tonight. And so now we're going to get Kevin Owens against Priest. How far do you think this goes, and is this more about Kevin Owens or more about Damian Priest, this program that they have going now?
I think it's more giving Priest something to do to keep him at. You got him working up against, you know, one of the best guys that they have going. So I think it's more to help him. And, you know, Kevin Owens just re-signed. I mean, he is very much what Christian was a long time ago and Jericho was slightly more recently. He's the utility guy that can jump in and out of the main event, and he can make anybody he works with look good. And so, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if it eventually comes to them, you know, competing over the U.S. title. But I still expect Priest to keep it and keep going. And again, for them to find something for Kevin Owens to do against whoever they want to get hot or whatever champion needs a match.
All right. He also brought up Veer. He said, is Veer the first example of a character who was DOA before they ever had the opportunity to truly debut? I think at this point, the Veer is coming to Raw vignettes have become more of a joke and a meme rather than a hype video. What do you think, Kev?
I mean, I kind of feel like Nathan Jones was that, but, you know, they at least, like, finally brought him out and tried to do some stuff with him. But, yeah, I don't know what we're supposed to expect, you know, from Veer at all. Cool look. You know, the promos and stuff were cool. But, yeah, there's really nothing for him to do right now because, I mean, maybe he comes out in the Rumble and he has, like, a great run and eliminates, like, eight guys. But, yeah, they teased and teased and teased and did nothing with the guy on a three-hour show where there's absolutely time to do it. Yeah, so I don't – whatever they were going to get out of him, they can't maximize whatever it was going to be now, regardless of how well he does when he comes.
I think it's a little less damaging than you're saying and JB's implying. I mean, it is a meme. It is a joke. It's taking forever. It seems like there was some sort of delay or change of mind in terms of the timing. But in a way, when you stretch it out this long, yes, it becomes a joke. But if he's good when he debuts, we're talking about him. But damage hasn't been done. It's just taking longer for him to come out than people want. I went to a David Bowie concert once, and he was like, we sat there for like an hour, 10 minutes waiting for him to come out with after the opening act had stopped, you know, had already done their thing. I don't know if he was late arriving or what was going on, but, you know, he finally came out, put on a great show. And by the end of the show, it didn't really matter, even though I'm still talking about it 25 years later. But man, we didn't have smartphones back then. And it was just like, what are we going to do? When is he going to come out? And so with Veer, it's like, I don't know. I mean, if he's really good and his debut has impact, whether it's at the Rumble or under other circumstances, I think he'll be fine regardless of this. And if he's not good, in a way, this, you know, isn't going to change the trajectory that much either. But, you know, has the anticipation peaked and now it's turning into a meme? Sure. You know, I mean, that is true. I think it can be offset pretty quickly. And finally, JB from Detroit says, I actually like the way Austin Theory's character is heading. If they're looking to make him more violent and serious, I'm all for it. That is a star who can draw. I love the show. Go VIP, everyone. Kim, what do you think of Austin Theory and what we've seen with Mr. McMahon? I joked earlier about McMahon saying he's going to, you know, maim and dismember, and all that be left of Austin Theory are, you know, eyeball tendrils and broken teeth and eardrums. I don't know what he said. It was gruesome. But that was an incentive, and Austin Theory went out and won. Is this ultimately, as JB's saying, you know, they're making it more violent and serious, an interesting and fruitful journey that Theory is going on as sort of the understudy of Vince McMahon, who's, I don't want to say taking him under his wing, but taking an interest in motivating him, and I think trying to get that ruthless aggression sparked to turn him into a major player.
Yeah, I feel like it's similar to what we saw with Drew during his first run, you know, Vince calling him the Chosen One. It took longer than people thought, but ultimately he turned out to be really good. I mean, you can be way worse things than Vince McMahon's personal project, who he's on the screen with, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, Theory's a young kid. He's 24, 25. Really good look, can really go in the ring. I think it bodes well for him. And for him to be so much younger than just about everybody that they have going, and to already be getting that time, I do think that bodes well for him. You know, can do the comedy stuff. Like, he was good in NXT when he was doing it. Yeah, I think everything's looking pretty good for his trajectory. Again, like, oh, boy, Velveteen, you had it, kid. You had it. I do think this is going to play out well for him as long as he stays out of trouble. And I think he really – like, he's in there with Balor, and he looked good in there with Balor. He looked good in the ring every time we've seen him. So, yeah, I think he's got a good trajectory. I think he's going to do just fine.
All right, Justin S. emailed and said, Bianca Belair looks like the favorite to win the Women's Royal Rumble this year, but do fans really want to see that? I'm not saying it's her fault at all, but she's got multiple title shots and number one contenders matches. We've all seen Becky against Bianca a handful of times. With her getting her coronation last year, shouldn't WWE be going to a different direction? And Wade, please tell me this Alexa Bliss storyline is leading to her going back to her old gimmick or leading to her entering and possibly winning the Rumble, because if not, why not just have her as a surprise entrant in the Rumble instead of these vignettes? So as far as Bianca goes, I still think Bianca being – I think she's, you know, one of the top, you know, perennial top 4, 5, 6 women right now and will be for years to come, and she might end up being top 2 or 3 depending on how much she rises and if anybody leaves or retires from that core group with Bayley and Becky and Charlotte. and whoever I'm – Bailey – oh, Sasha, you know, with that group. She's really good, and I think she's, you know, can already talk about, you know, big matches at WrestleMania and doing it again. Is it fresh enough, having her kind of out of the picture for a little while and Becky going off and having programs with Liv and Doudrop? Does it feel fresh enough if Belair does win the Rumble and chooses to challenge Becky? Is that a good direction to go at this stage for both Becky and Bianca?
I think Bianca gets the best babyface reaction on the roster, man or woman. Like, I really think she does. I think the way they respond to her when she talks, like, they pop when they're supposed to pop when she says something. I think, you know, we all know what happened at SummerSlam. I think that her winning the right way as a babyface, earning another shot by winning a Royal Rumble, I think that's how it's supposed to play out. Like, I always understand, isn't it time for somebody new? Well, they haven't tapped all the potential out of this person that they have. Becky literally changing match results to not have to face Bianca, and her, like, admittedly, like, being afraid to face her. I think having her win and having her chase down Becky again is exactly what you should do. Like, sometimes doing the right thing is just doing the right thing. Everything doesn't have to be new. You don't have to outthink yourself like they did at SummerSlam. No, I think straight-up match, one-on-one with the two of them, Becky not being able to fool her this time around, having a really good match and her winning is exactly what you want for a WrestleMania main event.
We talked about Alexa already, but is there a chance for her to be a top six wrestler again, or is she gone down this road towards being kind of a sideshow novelty act, and the chance to reset that was probably before these last 2 weeks? And since they haven't, you know, taking her, imagining her headlining as a world champion or world champion challenger feels like it's not what they have in mind for her and not what fans would buy. Have they gone too far down this road of her being, you know, not supernatural, but just out there?
I think they could still come back. I think, you know, they can snap out of the dream sequence like Dallas. I really think they can.
Yeah.
Just because she was that character for so long, people were so familiar with it, and she was so good at it, I think that they could bring back old Alexa and people respond to her in kind. I really do.
As far as you mentioned earlier, and I marked this down, ask for follow-up, Chad Gable and Otis and what they're promising to do next week. The mental aptitude test has some comedy potential. It also has a potential to be very poorly written and groan-inducing. But sort of like Sammy on SmackDown, almost anything Chad Gable's involved in, I really get a kick out of. I think he's been his sense of humor and his delivery has been underrated for years, and I think he's getting a chance to shine, and I think Vince McMahon gets him now, and he is filling a slot that Vince McMahon likes to have filled. A comedy-leaning heel who's really credible in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they're pushing them sort of out of nowhere at a top level, but I think they're good. It's a good matchup for what RK-Bro is. So I it's a challenge to the writing team. Bring some good stuff next week, because there's room for that to be actually a clever, memorable, good segment. And, you know, where Gable and Otis think they're outsmarting Riddle and Orton, but they, you know, outwit themselves, or they, you know, Riddle surprises them and they throw a fit, and the fans delight in seeing Gable and Otis get outsmarted when Gable was so arrogant about his 4.0 and his master's degree. So I'm prepared to enjoy it, but I'm also, you know, bracing myself for possible disappointment if it's too kind of cliche oriented or just phoned in.
Like anything else that he's involved in, if Randy's dialed in, it'll be good. Like, because Gable's going to do the Gable thing. And like you said, he's good. I love him touting his master's degree. I think that, you know, Otis has been good next to him. You know, Riddle's going to do everything he can to make it work. And Riddle playing off of serious heels is always good because he's such a goof. But it all hinges on Randy being dialed in. If Randy's dialed in, it'll be a good segment. If not, it'll drag.
Did you pick up on the math error from Dominic when he stood next to Ray and said, we're going to eliminate 29 other men. And then Corey Graves called him out for it. And like, if you eliminate 29 other men, two of you can't be standing there. They did end up, you know, sort of visually addressing it when Ray tossed Dominic over the top rope, you know, underlining the every man for himself thing. But I got a chuckle out of that when Dominic stood there and goes, my dad and I are going to eliminate 29 other men, because everyone says 29 other men. That's the you're ordered to say that. Everybody's got to say that, even though nobody eliminates 29 men, because nobody has ever been first and been the only person to eliminate everyone else. So it's this silly exaggeration anyway. You know, Roman Reigns, I eliminated 29 other men. No, you didn't. You know, you came out late, in the, you know, 2/3 into the match. You took a 20-minute nap while other people were tossing people out. And then you ducked, and someone threw themselves over the top rope. Like, that was the totality of your bragging point. As a babyface, he was bragging about eliminating 29 other men, and all he did is duck after taking a long nap at ringside. So the whole thing just is a joke when people say it, but I don't think they were self-aware when they said that.
The only person who did it right tonight was Liv, who said she was going to outlast 29 other women. And it's like, okay, you get it. Yay.
Exactly. Words matter. Kim, anything else from Raw that stands out or that you want to bring up?
I do think that you can see a sense of pride right now in Dana Brooke being 24/7 champion.
Yeah,
I think that's really cool.
Totally.
Like, the way she carries herself with that is really cool.
I'm happy for her because she's so happy. It's like a kid who, you know, for her birthday gets like a new like wooden airplane kit and puts it together, and just all weekend just running around with that airplane in her hand. Woohoo! Just so happy with something so simple.
Mm-hmm.
And she's so happy to have this meaningless joke of a title, but she just is so proud of being a champion, and she never wavers. Like, it's just completely believable. It's endearing. I mean, in a sort of a patronizing way, I'm endeared by, but it's endearing. And she's, you know, giving, I don't know if you can give meaning to something that's such a joke of a title, but yeah, I think she's sort of like endearingly likable in this.
Does AJ eliminate Omos, or do like 8 guys eliminate Omos?
Does Omos lose?
Yes. They literally had him, and I really think he's come along. But they had him do one move tonight against Reggie, you know. Like,
but
they were like, no, we're gonna do the one move. I think it's gonna be really interesting to see him. I'd say he gets at least like 6-7 eliminations. I do think he has a big night. Kind of forget that he's there. I don't know how you forget that he's there because he's so big. But yeah, it'd be interesting. Like, I think whoever eliminates him, it bodes well for them going into the rest of the year.
I don't think only AJ eliminates Omos. I think it will be a lot of people if Omos is eliminated. I am not convinced that he's not going to win and challenge whoever is the Raw champion. And that's the male world title match that is underneath one of the women's title matches at Headlines. I think they've invested so much in Omos. He's not damaged.
Yeah.
I mean, he's super green and can't cut promos. He's super limited, but that camera angle. I mean, that's all you need to say. He's so big. You know, look, Reggie, what's he's staring at his solar plexus. He's so short compared to Omos. So I just don't know that they're going to have Omos not win his first battle royal, his first Royal Rumble. I'm not rooting for it. I'm not saying he's my number one pick, but I mean, at this point, the way they treated Big E losing to Seth last week, clean. I mean, that could mean in reverse psychology, Big E's going to go out there and eliminate Omos and win. And then, you know, that'll be Big E's challenger when he regains the title at WrestleMania and Omos wants revenge. I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of stories they can tell, and I'm not ruling out a handful of people, but I'm definitely not ruling out Omos wins and ends up challenging. I don't think it'd be Lesnar, so they'd have to get the belt off of Lesnar somehow and get it back into Big E or Lashley's hands or something. So one other thing I wanted to bring up is, and this is from early on, I'm glad I remembered, is Seth teasing that if he wins at the Rumble against Reigns, he's going to bring the Universal title to Raw. And I know that's sort of been speculation as people have played out different scenarios now that Lesnar has the Raw-based WWE title. But the feeling is, you know, Lesnar-Roman is where they're heading because they, you know, didn't get to do it this last month, or actually earlier this month. Could that be a scenario? Do you buy into the possibility of Seth winning somehow, ending the Universal title, but only after Reigns sets the record for the longest reigning champ, and then just brings the Universal title to Raw, and they basically do a switch. And
definitely, you know, see a swap. Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely. And you know, you have every reason to believe that Brock is interested in costing Roman his title, and vice versa. You know, because that's where the beef is. And so, you know, if that happens to both of them or one of them, the other one can come challenge on SmackDown for the title. I can absolutely see that happening.
Just that.
Because I do still think, like, even after all this time, I still think that that's your money WrestleMania match between those two for sure.
Is Seth credible enough to be a champ at a championship level right now?
I think so. I think
so. His character with the clothes and the cackling and all that.
His ridiculous outfits. Yeah, I think, like, just him in there with Lashley tonight. You know, I'm going to work the leg, even though he's bigger than me. You know, yeah, I think Seth, all, you know, 215 pounds of him, I still think he is that good in the ring. They've always treated him like he's as good as a man standing across from him. Yes, I absolutely think that'll still work.
Anything else, Cam?
Not really. You know, I'm sure eventually we'll talk about Elimination Chamber. I did not see them putting a mainline pay-per-view on in Saudi Arabia. And so that relationship kind of continues to evolve. It'll be interesting if they get more eyes on that show than they typically do, just simply because it's a pay-per-view in continuity. So the lead up to that's going to be really interesting.
I agree. We'll probably start talking about that in 2 weeks, because it'll be the focus for quite a while. Only one show between Rumble and WrestleMania at this point, you know, one premier live event, I guess is what we're saying now. Cool. Cam, remind people again about your social media, and then we'll sign off.
Absolutely. Yeah, Instagram, Twitter. You can find me at Seahawk, C-E-H-A-W-K. You can find me streaming on Twitch, on twitch.tv/Seahawk. That's typically where you'll see me when I'm not doing stuff with the Torch. Again, eastcoastcast.com every week. Every Wednesday evening, 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central.
And you can follow me on Twitter at The Wade Keller, and follow our brand at PW Torch. Thanks, everybody, for joining us, and we'll be back Wednesday night for our Dynamite post show, and Friday night for the SmackDown post show here on the Red Logo Show. And we'll have our main Wade Keller Pro Wrestling podcast on our Blue Logo Show this week, too. So check that all out. Search Wade Keller in your podcast app to subscribe. And final, another reminder. We've got our new PW Torch daily cast format with Alex and Patrick talking 30 years ago Pro Wrestling Torch back issues. So it's called the PW Torch 90s Past Cast, and they walk through the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter headlines, Torch Talk interview highlights, backstage tidbits, editorial comments, pay-per-view results, and they discuss the fascinating 1992, which was sort of in between the big 80s expansion boom period and laid the groundwork for the ECW revolution and the Attitude Era and what happened with Monday Nitro. So check that out. It's free. It is on the PW Torch Daily Cast lineup, a different show with a different theme every day of the week. Just search PW Torch to subscribe to that. And you can go to pwtorchdailycast.com to see the full lineup of shows. Thanks, Cam. Always great talking to you.
Thank you for having me, Wade. Take care.
You bet. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.